The Deadbolt Mystery Society presents The Warwick Recordings, a story about secrets and how they are uncovered in a strange neighborhood in an even stranger town.
Hello again, it's Knox Carter, and this is Warwick Recording number 4. You've decided to listen to more of my story. You're intrigued. Admit it. It's definitely not the kind of story you hear every day. It's not even the kind of story I tell every day. And these are the kind of books that I write. We last left off at the part of the story where someone representing a group called the Court of Moloch snuck into my house at night and left me an eyeball in a box as a way of telling me they were watching me. Then I discovered a set of numbers on one of the framing studs based on something a murder victim told me in a dream. After having all the fun I could stand for one day, I barricaded myself in my bedroom and slept until the next day. When I woke up the next morning, it was nearly 10 o'clock. My body had obviously taken the rest it needed, oblivious to the passing of time. I was normally up and at it by 7, so this was definitely uncharacteristic for me. Then again, it was also uncharacteristic to go through the sort of things I had gone through the previous evening. So I didn't beat myself up too much for sleeping in. It took me a few minutes to rip the barricade boards off the door. I cautiously opened the door, fully expecting to find some other threat waiting for me on the other side, but there was nothing. If it wasn't for the neatly wrapped gift box that still sat beside my mattress like a birthday present, I could have convinced myself that the events of the previous night had been a dream. I knew that wasn't the case. Someone had broken into my home, climbed the rickety stairs leading to the second floor, left an eyeball outside my door, and told me I was being watched. The danger I felt from the night before had seemingly evaporated in the bright rays of dawn. Sunlight streamed in through the cracked blinds, and I could hear the chirping of birds. It was going to be a nice day. Immediately, I raised all the blinds and let as much sun into the house as possible. The extra light immediately made me feel better. I looked at the outside world and the picturesque neighborhood I lived in, scarcely believing it could be full of the horrors I had experienced the night before. There was a convenience store only a mile or so from my neighborhood. After making a quick trip there to grab a couple energy drinks and a pack of powdered donuts, I headed back home to get started on solving my own personal mystery. I needed to start working on the house, but at the moment, I needed answers. How had the intruder gotten into my house the night before? And where had he or she gone? I mean, there had to be an explanation. I spent the first hour of the day scouring the downstairs, searching for any explanation that would make things make sense, but I came up empty-handed. I had just about convinced myself that I was crazy when I remembered something I had noticed in the library from the night before. The previous owner had been a lover of books from the look of things. The mention of a library on the realty website was one of the features that drew me to the house. Strangely enough, all of the books had been left behind and were now moldy and covered in dust. It was obvious by the look of them that they hadn't been touched by human hands in a very long time. Some of them were covered in cobwebs. Others looked like they might have been printed by Gutenberg. The dust on the floor in front of the library was marked by footprints. Some were facing the bookcase, and some were facing away from the bookcase. But it was clear something had happened right here in this room, and I knew for a fact that I had not set foot inside the library. From the look of things, the person who had been in my house had simply dissolved into the floor or walked through a wall. Where else could they have gone? This room seemed to be both the point of origin and egress for my intruder. I was more confused now than ever before, but I was also intrigued. My brain was racing with possibilities, and had this been a mystery that not involved me directly, I would have been riveted to read something like this. This kind of mystery in the publishing world would be referred to as a page-turner. And if I had stumbled onto such a book as this, I would be eagerly devouring page after page to find out what happened next. Was I dealing with a ghost? Surely ghosts don't leave footprints. But if not that, then what? It didn't make any sense. I finally decided to give up the search downstairs and look for answers in a different way. My car was serving as my rolling office until I got things repaired inside the house, and all the important paperwork I had from the purchase of the house was inside the glove box. It took me a few minutes, but I eventually located the business card of the realtor that I had used to purchase the house. The realtor picked up the phone on the second ring, no doubt expecting to talk to a new potential client who wanted to buy a home. "Preston Adams speaking," the voice on the other end of the phone said. "How can I help you?"
"Mr. Adams, this is Knox Carter. How are you?"
"I'm doing great, Mr. Carter. Happy to hear from you. How's the new house treating you so far?"
"Great. No problem at all, unless you count spiderwebs. I think I must have walked into at least a dozen of them so far. I hate that feeling."
"You'll have it cleaned up in no time, I would imagine. What can I do for you today, Mr. Carter?"
"I have a strange request, and I hope you can help. I'm considering writing a book about the experience of buying an old house. Obviously, I'll sensationalize a lot of the process and add some fictional components to add an air of mystery to the story. But I would like to speak to the previous owners, if possible. For starters, they left a lot of things behind, and I'd like to see if they wanted any of their stuff back. But I was also hoping to get an account of what their time spent in the home was like."
Preston says nothing at first, prompting me to check in on him. "Are you still there, Mr. Adams?"
Yes, sorry. I'm still here. I was just thinking. You said you want to talk to the previous owner?"
"Yeah, just to get some details about what living in the house was like. Kind of like a eyewitness testimony, so to speak. It's for my book, that's all."
Right, I see.
"Is something wrong?"
"I'm just not sure it's a good idea that you speak with the previous owners."
"And why is that?"
"Talking to the owners might be somewhat of a problem."
"The owners are still alive, aren't they?"
"Yes, of course, they're still alive, but neither of them are very talkative. I don't think you would get very far with them."
"Well, why not let me see for myself? All I need is the name and contact info. I can take it from there."
"Surely you have those things."
"Yes, I have all that. That isn't the issue."
"Then what is the issue?"
"I'd rather not discuss that."
"Why not? I'm not asking for their social security numbers or anything. Can you at least tell me their names?"
"The house was previously owned by the Falk family. The man's name is Nicholas Falk. His wife is Becky."
"And how can I get in touch with them?"
"You can't."
"Okay, this wasn't meant to be a cloak and dagger type call. I just want his contact information. Why can't I get in touch with him? You said they aren't dead."
"I'd rather not say."
"What are you hiding, Mr. Adams?"
"Nothing at all. I just don't think it's a good idea to contact them. They've been through a lot."
"Why don't you let me decide if it's a good idea or not?"
"Do they have a phone number?"
"Yes, they do."
"Great. I got a pen and paper handy. Just say it out loud and I'll write it down."
"I would prefer not to," Adams says.
"I need you to give me that contact info," I said through gritted teeth.
"I won't give you the phone number," Preston said forcefully. I took a deep breath before speaking.
"Look, we can do this the easy way, or I can go and do the research myself and find these guys. I'm sure all the sales information is a matter of public record. After I do this, the next thing I'll do is go to every online platform that you're listed and leave a scathing review, making sure to mention your lack of helpfulness. As I'm sure you're aware, I'm a writer by trade, so I am certain I can write a review that is attention-getting, to say the least. I also have quite the robust social platform myself. I'm sure word would get around quickly if I were to make a post."
"Look, Mr. Carter,
I'm not asking for a vial of their blood or anything, just a simple phone number. Is that so hard?"
"Mr. Carter, do I need to make good on my threat?"
This time I could hear Preston sigh on the other end of the line.
"That isn't necessary. I'll give you what you want. I would just prefer that you didn't mention that you got it from me."
"Fair enough. Now see, that wasn't so hard, was it?"
"Why is it that I can't get in touch with Nicholas Falk or his wife Becky? You said they have a phone number.
All you have to do is say it out loud."
"It's not necessarily that you can't get in touch with them. I would just prefer that you didn't."
"Oh, now we're getting somewhere. Why is it that I think the Falks might tell me something that you should have told me?
Maybe you didn't disclose everything about this house, and you're afraid they'll expose your negligence.
Mr. Carter, please. What will Nicholas Falk tell me if I ask him about you?
Nothing. He's in a coma.
A coma? What happened?
He was attacked. He suffered blunt force trauma to the head. He managed to call 911 before the attackers finished the job. He's been in a coma ever since.
How many people were involved?
The police aren't sure exactly, but they estimate at least a handful.
Okay, so why was telling me all of this so difficult?
The attack occurred in the house. At the time, police determined that it was a random home invasion. It certainly wasn't something I needed to disclose. Crime in Valley Falls is always an issue. They could have chosen from any of 100 or so homes in Warwick Court.
You're telling me that the house I bought was the scene of a gruesome attack that left a man comatose. It's obvious now that the reason it was sold was because of that incident. That seems like need-to-know information.
Falk's wife, Becky, insisted on selling after the attack. She said she didn't feel safe there anymore. I couldn't blame her. The police seemed convinced that the attacks were random. I didn't think it was worth bringing up.
You didn't think it was worth bringing up? It's not your head at risk of being cracked open, now is it?
All of this would have been nice to know before I signed the paperwork.
Would it have changed your opinion?
Maybe. Maybe not.
I guess we'll never know now.
Forget about the phone number. What hospital's keeping Mr. Falk?
St. George's.
Thanks. I'll be in touch if I have more questions, and you'll be all too happy to answer them. Am I right?
Whatever you need, Mr. Carter. Could you please not tell them I sent you?
I won't.
But that's only because I recommend you tell them yourself. Ring them up and tell them I'm going to pay them a visit.
Mr. Carter, please. I'll be in touch.
The fact that the previous owner of the house had nearly been killed by an intruder couldn't be a coincidence. Although I didn't understand any of what was going on, I knew there had to be a connection between Nicholas Falk's home invasion and the intruder that broke into my home the previous night. Without much else to go on, I decided to drive over to St. George's and see if I could get Mrs. Falk to talk to me. As it turned out, Becky Falk was a wealth of information. Preston Adams had also done as I requested and called her first, which meant she was expecting me.
I need to go for now. But if you come back later, I'll tell you everything about the conversation I had with Becky Falk. I promise.
Until next time, this has been Knox Carter for the Warwick Recordings.
The Warwick Recordings are presented by the Deadbolt Mystery Society. Written by Jason Brannan. Edited by David Alderman. Narrated by Glenn Payne. Sound designed and mixed by Glenn Payne. Executive producers Jason Brannan and Sean Brannan. You can support us by reviewing the Warwick Recordings on the platform where you found us and by sharing this podcast with others. If you enjoyed the Warwick Recordings, we think you would also like our puzzle-solving mystery games, which are found at deadboltmysterysociety.com. Thank you for listening. Until next time.